I guess I've worked on oysters for many years, but more recently there's been an interest in Angazi reef restoration, which is being driven by the Nature Conservancy. And so I've been working with them on looking at the history of Angazis in Tasmania in particular. So I did a review of Angazi aquaculture and fisheries and was amazed to find out that there used to be enormous beds of Angazi reefs all around Tassie, but especially in southeastern Tasmania. Massive middens in many places, but they were overfished. In fact, I think it was probably the first fishery to be overfished in Australia with the settlement of European settlers. And largely in Tasmania, those Angazi reefs were wiped out in the 1850s, 1860s, which really surprised me.
It's staggering, isn't it? Because you look at some of, and there were some fairly good records kept in those days, and some of them tell us that around the 1860s, I think it was somewhere around 22 million Angazis, you know, came out of Tasmania.
And that was actually, according to the records, these are the parliamentary records, that was only from five bays in Tasmania. So it was probably a lot more in total from all of Tassie.
So how did we wind up to the situation now where, you know, they're actually quite a scarce commodity?
Pacific oysters were introduced in the 1950s and they have been a much easier oyster to produce. They're faster growing, they're hardier, were. But now that we have POMS, Pacific Oyster Mortality Syndrome, there's an interest from a few people in growing Angazis again. Plus, there's also interest from the Nature Conservancy in trying to restore some of the native oyster reefs around Australia, including Tasmania.
The other interesting bit of history that I found a bit fascinating was that the Angazi is very, very similar to the kind of oysters that would have been eaten in the UK and Britain at the time in its size and shape. And so it was like a bit of home.
Exactly. Well, that's why I think they fished Angazis so readily when the first settlers came out here, because they are so similar to the European native oyster, the Ostrea edulis. In fact, some people think they may even be the same species.
In trying to restore the reefs and bring back the Angazi, how lengthy a process do you reckon that's going to be?
It's going to be decades, I think. It's not something that's going to be achieved overnight. It's a slow process of naturally building up those beds, those native oyster beds. We've also been doing some surveys around Tasmania looking for any oyster beds that still remain. The only known remaining Angazi oyster bed in its entire distribution from Western Australia to New South Wales is actually in George's Bay in Tasmania. And so there's quite a lot of interest, and we're going to be doing research on looking at the biodiversity in relation to those oyster reefs compared to areas without any reef there.
Is your Angazi oyster a hardy oyster?
They're slower growing than the Pacifics. They have their own disease, Bonamia. If they're stressed or sort of grown in high density, then Bonamia seems to come out. So they do have their own, I guess, idiosyncrasies. So to grow Angazis, you need to think a little bit differently to growing Pacifics. They're much more subtidal, so they're not as tolerant of fresh water. They're not as tolerant of temperature change as well.
In the breeding cycle of the Angazi, whereas your Pacific, although when they're spawning, they're certainly, you can't eat a lot of them, they're very rich, but the Angazi gets a bit gritty and is pretty much inedible during that time.
They have very different reproductive systems. So with the Pacific oyster, they broadcast spawners. So they just release the eggs and sperm out into the water and then they fertilise externally. With Angazis, they actually retain the eggs inside the animal and they're fertilised inside. And so the larvae develop initially inside the oyster, and that's why they're gritty. It's actually those larvae that are growing. And so in Europe, there's always been the old tale of you never ate oysters with an R in the month, because that was the months when they contained the larvae. And so it's very similar here with the Angazi oyster. When they've got larvae, they're gritty.
Now, you're talking about restoring reefs, but there are growers who are interested in growing Angazi oysters for consumption. Does the growing methodology for them commercially for consumption differ much from the Pacifics?
Not a lot. They just have to be careful that they don't expose them to as much fresh water or as high a temperature. Otherwise, fairly similar methods, but of course it has to be worked out in each growing area, which is the best method for that particular area. But otherwise, there's a lot of similarities.
I guess you come down to one where you say, is there a similarity or a difference in taste?
Well, the experts reckon Angazis are by far the best. I'm not a great oyster eater myself, but the connoisseurs definitely think the native oyster is a stronger taste that they very much prefer.
Christine, we were talking recently about looking after salt marshes in Tasmania, but in that conversation it came up that farmers particularly are quite proactive in the process, and you're talking about reef restoration, particularly the Angazi reefs. Is there a good cooperation between oyster farmers and potential oyster farmers and the people who want to, you know, preserve and extend the reefs?
More and more, the oyster farmers and the reef restoration people are working together, particularly in the area of hatchery production. They can really work together so that one hatchery can produce oysters both for reef restoration and for production, and so that works well. But a lot of Angazi farmers are also just very keen to see those native reefs restored.